Welcome to the Hands in Motion podcast, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. Here we will discuss all things upper extremity therapy, from assessment to treatment, the latest research, the patient experience, and other topics related to the field of upper extremity rehab. Learn more and subscribe today at asht.org.
This episode of Hands in Motion is brought to you by the Indiana Hand to Shoulder Center, a private hand surgery and hand therapy practice recognized across the world for its specialization in problems and injuries of the upper extremity. The Diagnosis and Treatment Manual for Physicians and Therapists is now in its fifth edition. This manual serves as a resource for physicians, therapists, physicians' assistants, and nurses, and other healthcare professionals managing patients with hand and upper extremity medical conditions or injuries. There are now four volumes and availability for both hard copy and electronic versions. For more information on purchasing this manual, please visit www.diagnosisandtreatmentmanual.com. Welcome to Hands in Motion, the podcast where we explore the intricate world of hand therapy and rehabilitation. I'm Kara Smith, and in today's episode, we're delving into the cutting-edge realm of AI integration in hand therapy. From innovative technological advances to personalized treatment approaches, join us as we uncover how artificial intelligence is revolutionizing the way we rehabilitate and restore function to the intricate mechanisms of the hand. Get ready to dive deep into the intersection of human touch and technological innovation on this episode of Hands in Motion. Does that sound like a new intro for the podcast? Well, in the spirit of this episode on utilizing AI in hand therapy, I asked ChatGPT to write an intro for our podcast, Hands in Motion, about our episode on using AI in hand therapy. Stephanie and I both agree that we would never have been able to come up with that intro. We are excited, though, to be joined on this episode by Zach Sutton, a physical therapist and certified hand therapist who's utilizing AI in his clinical practice to increase efficiencies. He shares with us a variety of ways to implement AI in hand therapy and discusses the various benefits. Welcome to Hands in Motion, Zach. Well, thanks for joining us, Zach. Why don't you, before we get into our topic this evening, why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
My name is Zach Sutton. I'm a physical therapist and certified hand therapist in Middle Tennessee. I have a private practice there in a rural community, so we see a variety of things that are coming out of the region, folks that are not able to make it back into the major medical centers. And so we see a diverse amount of diagnoses and pathologies and get to meet and work with a variety of patients.
So our topic on this episode is AI, and I know that that's been sort of a buzz over the last few years, and probably we'll see it continue and go in lots of different directions. But help us wrap our heads around what that means, what that concept is, and we can even speak to it in terms of how we can utilize that in the rehab setting.
Absolutely. Great way to kick off the topic. A colleague of mine and myself, Cody Keel, we presented at the Tennessee chapter of the American Physical Therapy Association 2 months ago on this topic. And as Cody introduced it, he really talked about, this is what I think about when I think about AI. And it was all these spaceships and robots and taking over the world kind of type thing. And then he says, well, and he stepped back and he says, who uses Google Maps? It tells us where to go. It is a type of AI. Who uses Google? We type in questions and it gives us all these resources. So there are a lot of things that we're already using to some level. And we already have some level of suspicion when we are doing a Google search. Well, I don't know about that reference and going onto that site. So I think there is some skepticism, which is good to have when we have fear and anxiety. Typically, that's telling our bodies or our brains that there's maybe something there. And of course, we've been working on pain science a lot now, and we also want to bring people out of some of that anxiety that's not necessary. And so hopefully this podcast is one of those things that can kind of balance the tipping board of what's good for us and what can we still be skeptical on.
So I'm going to have you just back up a second. For those people who are not tech savvy at all, what is AI stand for?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not a big fan of acronyms, but I tend to use it with AI for some reason, but artificial intelligence. And so that idea that there's something else that has a brain that is thinking for us. And I think that's the notion that people can't get their head wrapped around. One of the comments when I spoke with a professor after the conference at Belmont University with the Tennessee chapter, she said, we had a couple physical therapist assistants going, well, does this mean that I might be able to treat without a physical therapist? And so there's some truth to that. And that's actually one of the examples we did. So our example in that case was more orthopedic in the lower extremity. And it was about a boy that came in with a hip strain. It was a baseball player and things just didn't sync right. And so Cody put in the past medical history and things like that. And he said, give me some alternative diagnoses to a hip strain. And one of the ones was Legg's Capparthes disease, which is avascular necrosis of the hip. And it's like, oh, yeah, I need to be thinking about that. So that was a great way to say it's not going to give us the diagnosis, but it certainly can help us maybe step back and see the bigger picture. And maybe we got too much into the weeds down a certain pathology and we didn't think about it. I mean, I think about the radial side of the hand and is it de Quercy veins versus intersection syndrome? So help us tease out some of those things that maybe we weren't necessarily thinking about or we assumed prematurely.
I think you making the point of, and even taking the step back of talking about just the name, I think you're right. When we hear AI, we think, okay, that's a little more benign, but artificial intelligence, I think that does make people a little anxious, but you're right. I think we do use it more than we realize we do with Google Maps. And I mean, think about even just doing a Google Scholar search. I can't remember all of the articles or what I'm specifically looking for. So I think that's a really good example. What are some ways that we can leverage that as a clinician in the clinic day to day? Are there ways to use AI maybe to make us more efficient?
I mean, obviously the big silver bullet here with making us more efficient is the documentation piece. And Cody and I kind of built up to that when we gave the presentation, because there are other uses too that are not as maybe dominant in our thing that I'll just mention, because I think that that's the big ticket item is the documentation piece. But writing a letter of medical necessity, we use a lot of templates, but we can take our documentation, our PDF, and copy it and put it into an AI-based system and say, create a letter of medical necessity to this insurance company with this data for the goals of this, and it will pre-format that all together. And then, of course, what do I need to do? I need to proofread it. But that's still my work. I'm putting my signature on there, and I've agreed that this says the right thing. And so we do that with assistants, right? They do notes and then we co-sign their notes. So we need to be reading their notes and making sure that it's appropriate. We're putting our name on it. So that's one that is an extensive amount of efficiency. And to give an example, I had a 22-year-old female with muscular dystrophy, has some reasonable ability to stand, but has very little function in the upper extremity, very poor limb girdle control. And I talked with her about the things that she's not able to do. I talked with her about the things she is able to do. And I took that dictation and I put it in there and there was the letter. And that's like, I'm looking at you right now, Dr. Smith, and able to like have this connection and conversation. And I didn't stop to take notes. I allowed her to have this conversation and continue on. When Cody did, he did a mock patient interview and he did one with the same 10 questions, one with him documenting and recording the answers, and another one where he just was recording the conversation and putting the dictation into AI. And it took half the amount of time when he was with the AI. And then when he was typing the notes in, when he was having to type it, the patient was looking around kind of aloof and disinterested. And then what was really telling is at the end, Cody actually asked the same question twice because he had been so busy typing when the patient was talking, he missed it. So that's just a really nice way to have that conversation, particularly something with when things are so profound and somebody needs your attention. So that's one of the big ticket items, is we can have that eye contact and that, and we can actually truly listen to our patients and not worry about documentation. I do that with students. The first thing I want them to do is I want them to be able to conduct an evaluation and not worry about documentation. And they can concentrate on that flow. They can think about that next question rather than, let me write this. Now what's that next question? So the efficiency and the flow of the conversation can be more natural and the patient could be more engaged. So that's one example that kind of gets us still back into documentation.
So what sort of program would you use in that sense?
So there are a couple ways to do it. And Cody and I were cautious not to say, hey, we recommend this program or that program. I've gotten in depth with a lot of them. I'm happy to share some of them because I think it's good for people to know where I've been. But what Cody and I did to start off, just to show people that this is not about necessarily having to have a certain program, I got up on stage and I interviewed Cody. We had a scenario and I turned on Google Docs and I put the icon on and I hit dictation and I started asking him questions. And so the whole crowd was watching as this monologue. I mean, it's single line, not necessarily any periods or commas. And it's just this huge monologue. And we had 2 pages of monologue. And then we got up from that interview and I went over to the computer and this was all live. And I took it and I plugged it into an AI application and said, create me a soap note. And boom, it created me a soap note. And I said, I don't want the objective in paragraphs. So I said, put the objective in list form and assure that there's numerical objective data. And it changed it right up. Then I said, let's make 2 short-term and 2 long-term goals that are smart, that are applicable and patient-specific and functional. So then we can say, okay, this is the patient's list of medicines. Are there any that I should be concerned about that might interfere with healing? Okay. And then so we can utilize that again to help us a little bit on medicines are always changing. I know I can look through that list and I have some familiarity with it, but it's nice to have some of them just highlight or some that I might reach out to that physician and say, hey, this medication might be hindering some of our healing. So that's a very rudimentary way to do it. Another is using dictation that can convert into a text. Otter, I've actually seen advertisements for Otter on TV now. My wife is the secretary for the library, the local library here, and she spends hours upon hours reading and listening to the recording of her on her phone that she's done, and she's typing out all the notes as she relives the meeting. And I told her, I said, here, take Otter and just hit record. And she did it on one of her friend's phones, so she had the recording. And then she did it on Otter and it went to text. And then I said, look, now you can just, if you want to do it manually, go through that text and pull it all out, copy and paste, or throw it in AI and say, this is the outline format I want it in. And boom, she spent an hour on it instead of 3 or 4. So Otter is a dictation-based system, and there are a number of them out there that can go dictation to text. There are 3 others that I've kind of researched that are kind of applicable to us as therapists. One is Suno, it's Sunoh. They have an app. The biggest challenge with this one is that you have to load the patient, just a basic quick demographic before getting going, but it does it in a soap note format when you're done. The big challenge I have with that is a lot of times I'll be like, okay, come on back. And then I need to hit go and I don't have that 30 seconds to load the patient. So it's not the quickest. The other two, one is called Freed, F-R-E-E-D. It has an app. You hit the button and it's going. No need to load a patient. And it creates a soap note format, is thorough and objective about it. And then there's Comprehend. It doesn't have an app that you can download from the app store, but they show you a way that you can directly connect to the internet and brings you right to it. So it is pretty quick. And you just hit a plus button, you start recording. The one about Comprehend, you can actually change the templates. So you can add another category, like you can add a goal category, you can add a patient education category, and you'll just type in like a command, like place any patient information or education I provided to the patient within this category. And so you can have it formatted any way you want. And a couple of these do bolt on to documentation EMRs. So for example, Comprehend bolts on to WebPT and syncs directly into it. So the days of typing for me are pretty much over. So those are the big ticket ones that I've utilized. And I think all of those are ones that if you're looking for to investigate, and most of them have trials for it. And I'd also recommend not accepting the price that they offer on the website. I talk to them, particularly if you have a team that you can get a couple more people involved with it.
So I have a question. I'm not sure what kind of facility that you're working in, if it's a private facility, hospital-based. Have you met any resistance from management or directorship as far as implementing AI as your documentation?
That's a great question. In terms of the patient standpoint, we put it in our informed consent. We already had it in there that we may be videoing or taking pictures for patient education or for their medical record. We also added in there that we may be recording to aid us in documentation. And so we're upfront about that with patients so they know when, I mean, our informed consent is very small, it's very direct. But thankfully, I think management that are also practitioners or have been practitioners are going to get it. I really hope they do, because this is going to make quality of work, burnout, all those buzz terms right now, it makes our lives better, more enjoyable with the patient. And so, I mean, just an example I was thinking about when I've used Google Docs for a long time just to dictate, or if I have my web-based EMR up and I'm in a place, I can hit just a box and I just throw out measurements. I have to go back and reorganize those. But when I'm in the doing the recording with the AI app, I don't have to worry about going back and revising. I can just have that conversation about getting those measurements, MCP of the index, DIP, PIP, and just go right through them. And so I think when management recognizes that that time that I'm spending doing that evaluation is significantly decreased, and now I'm getting into treatment, well, there's a piece that connects to now I'm able to do more treatment. So my evaluation time is shorter, and therefore my productivity with that one patient is higher. Not to mention the positive quality of work and reduced burnout and easier on the eyes and screen time. So I would hope that most of them would be good.
I was just thinking as far as like I have a system that the hospital uses as far as documentation, and I'm not sure how I would be able to integrate AI within that documentation system. And I would have to start way up at the top to try to get them to buy into the AI to be able to implement. I'm sure there's a way that it can be done. I just think it would take more research as far as that.
Two thoughts that come up with that. First, my question would be a research question. Is anybody else in the company or organization utilizing AI? Because it might be a select group within a department that is using it. Nuance was featured on Good Morning America about a year ago, and their physician-based AI soap note format. And I know that there's a number of physicians that are using that and then connecting in. So it may be at a departmental level that it's happening. And so that's great that if somebody's already kind of starting to pave that path, you can kind of go on that. And if it's something that is a little bit like, if you have a system that is not web-based, it's probably not going to bolt on if it's a server-based system. So with that, I mean, I'll tell you, copy and pasting, click, click. And as I'm copying and pasting and I can proofread it and make sure that it's lined up and how I want it. And that's the other part about it that we talked earlier about, is that's where I still have to put my eyes on it. So when I'm copying and pasting it into a server-based system, I can feel reassured that what's in there is the content that I want in there. So I think even with that, it's kind of a side. It could be a side and you could copy and paste into it, even if it's not directly integrated with the EHR.
To piggyback off of that, I think the first question or the first resistance that my facility would have is the security of it and HIPAA and just ensuring application. What is the security of this?
Yeah, I think that's with almost anything that we have utilized, right? That patient information isn't compromised. There's a couple things with that. One is these companies that are marketing to us as therapists recognize that, and they're going to be HIPAA compliant. I mean, they're going to be very direct about that, that they're HIPAA compliant. The other factor is we can make it as generic as we want. So as I go in and I hit start this recording, it timestamps it, date and time. So I actually never have to put in a patient's name into that information if I didn't want to. And I would have that timestamped and I would know that, oh, hey, 9:30 on Wednesday, that was Mr. Smith. And then I can make that connection. And so if I get like two or three evals into the day and I don't have time to copy and paste it in the chart, I still know, have some reference, but I might not even say the patient's name in that whole context. So there is that option. So certainly when I'm using Google Docs and our Google Docs is HIPAA compliant, and then I go in to post it into an AI-based app to create a soap note and doing it the kind of generic non-medical formatted company, I'm going to make sure there's no patient information in there. No date of birth, no name or things like that. And that keeps me still HIPAA compliant.
Have you seen any data, any numbers on how AI is helping increase efficiencies? Is there anything out there yet? Or is that something that may be on the horizon to say, like, we see a decrease in time to document because nobody gets paid to document. We're seeing 10, 12 patients a day, but none of that time, you aren't reimbursed for that. You're reimbursed for your time with your patients. So is there any data out there that shows that this is increasing efficiency for clinicians?
Sounds like we need to go get an IRB. It's a really great question. I don't think there is that Cody and I found. I mean, we did this presentation 2 months ago and we did not look specifically for that, but we did a broad AI documentation search just to see what was out there. And we did not find a lot. I would imagine that the answer to that question would certainly be picked up by some of these medically AI-based companies because that's what's going to help sell on their price tag for sure. Anecdotally, for me, it's pretty quick that I can be working with a patient and I hit stop transcribing, hit in the button for it to start processing, and I don't have to do any typing. So the amount of efficiency is certainly there, particularly if you have one that's integrated directly into your documentation system.
Mm-hmm. Well, even I, a few years back, recognized, well, our physicians and our nurse practitioners, PAs throughout the hospital system were dictating. And so I just said to my boss, hey, would you allow me to do that? And like you said a while back, you said you aren't doing too much typing. It has definitely, on the days that I am able to dictate assessments and subjective information or whatnot, it's made me a little typing lazy. I like to pick up that microphone and just hit the button and I'm able to speak what my thoughts, they can come right out of my head to my mouth instead of to my fingers to type. And I'm done with a note so much faster. It's my word saying that, you know, I'm not putting it into a system and it developing it. It's just typing it out. And I do still have to go back and read through it and make sure that it changes phalanx to something else or orthosis to some random word. But I've even seen just that with dictation, the increased efficiency in getting my documentation notes done.
I have been using dictation for years and I have a little iPad mini. I wear scrubs. It fits in my side pocket. I carry it around. I pull it out. It's a wonderful tool to me. But the challenge with dictation is I'm in a clinic with other people. I can't just be in the middle of the clinic and do the dictation. I have to go into a corner or go into an office or a clinic exam room or someplace where I can be somewhat compliant. So that's one thing that makes this even more efficient than dictation because it's already into text. And so I don't have to spend that 3 or 4 minutes thinking through that process and trying to figure out exactly what's going on. Because let me kind of take a step back and tell you a little bit about some of the challenges with having the recording, because essentially when you're doing your dictation, it's like telling your patient, you present with this today, and we've narrowed it down to these two impairments that are really leading to this dysfunction. And so our plan of care to treat those is going to be implementing this at home. And then when you come to the clinic, we're going to be working on scar tissue mobilization. We're going to be working on tendinitis. We're going to be working on these types of things. And I tell that to the patient. That's what I would be dictating, right? So I'm already telling that patient what I'm doing. And so that's the dictation right there. That's my assessment. So I'm sharing it with them. And sometimes I'm like, I'll tell them, and I'm like, and I'm going to throw in a big word because I'm dictating this. Just so they know that I'm new. So that's the thing, is sometimes I'll say words that I wouldn't typically say to a patient. And I'm like, I don't expect you to understand this, but I'm going to say it so it's in your chart. And so there's sometimes when I might go back later and type in something because I didn't want that patient to latch on to that pathology or be concerned about that or raise anxiety. So I'm still very conscientious of what I say to my patients because I don't want to have red flags or things that may worry them or concern them. But the examination part is, I think, the part that takes a little bit getting used to. And so I typically will say, okay, well, now I'm going to start your examination. And that helps the AI recognize that I'm moving into a part that I want it to record. And I'll say, okay, go ahead and make a fist for me. Okay, composite fist is full. Okay, excellent. You got a great composite fist. Let's go ahead and take grip strength. Okay, grip strength on the left, we got 54 pounds. Grip strength on the right is 34. Okay, so that's a deficit that we're going to want to be able to work on. So I have to say that out loud. And I was typically saying some of those things when I was dictating, but it's much more pronounced that I have to describe what's going on. So if the patient says during the subjective, I have pain right along here, and they're rubbing their radial side of their forearm, I have to say, okay, so right here along the radial side of your forearm? And they go, yes, right here. So I have to make sure that I'm bringing specificity to the note. And it's a little bit of a curveball for learning to get really good quality AI.
Yeah, you have to be a little more descriptive in your conversation so it does pick up what your patient's describing. Similar to when you're listening to a podcast and you can't, I can see who I'm speaking to, but our listeners don't. So we can't visualize, we have to describe our conversation.
Absolutely. That's the key. That is absolutely key.
Have any of your patients felt, or have you felt that they are put off by you having that very candid and descriptive conversation while you're treating them?
I've been using this for just a few weeks. I've been using Google Docs for a little while, and that is not as good quality as these specific medical apps. So I have not. And one of the doctors that was here, who's now in Kentucky, used Nuance. And so he and I had some pretty extensive conversations. And so I started asking his patients. I said, so did he talk a lot during the evaluation? Oh, he's very thorough. He knows a lot of stuff. And I never got like, yeah, he told me stuff I didn't understand. And so he had a way about him going through it that the patients just got to kind of see the inner workings of him. And so they knew they were thinking. And so it's almost makes them feel like they're really paying attention and digging in. And we try to get that out of the subjective. But I can tell you that my subjectives are better, not just because of the eye contact and I'm not taking notes, but because I have to reinforce so you feel it here along the radial side of the forearm and say, yes, right here along. Because otherwise, if I was just typing, I'm like, I feel it here. Okay. And I type it in and then there's dead silence in space. Now I'm reaffirming what my patient is telling me more often. So to some extent, I think it works in our favor that they know that we're tracking these things and we're taking objective measurements. And it's just not the voodoo that we're doing when we're feeling the tendon versus the capsule and trying to make that differentiation and just sharing that. One of the important things is to go, after we explain it, go, okay, I've said a lot today. Now I want to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? And that gives them the opportunity to clarify any of those things. You said this back in the objective, and I can clarify that if there's an issue. So I think that's an important opportunity to your point, is give them the opportunity to ask questions about something we might have said and we didn't anticipate them being concerned about it.
What has been your biggest challenge with implementing AI, and what has been your greatest, I guess, win, or the thing that you've found to have the greatest effect on your practice?
So the biggest challenge, I think, is finding the right AI, because they are a little different And I think with everything, there's benefits of all of the three that I mentioned today, plus all the others that are developing, and we're going to see more come on the market. And I would imagine that we're also going to see some of our EMRs buy some of these companies and put them into our systems. I see that on the horizon from a business standpoint, particularly those ones that have bolted on quickly and have a big growth of people that are connected to that EMR. So I think that's the challenge, is finding the one that works right and is the right price. Two different models, the Suno model, they pay per evaluation. So if you have a month where you're not seeing a lot of new patients, well, it's a cheaper month. You have one that you see a lot, it's a more expensive month. Whereas the other two, Comprehend and Freed, they're based on a therapist. So if you have somebody that is part-time, I would be trying to negotiate, say they're part-time, and try to get a reduced rate because they are part-time. But it's typically you get X. With Otter, the dictation system, you get this many minutes. So if you have shorter conversations and you just do the subjective and objective and you stop it then it's going to save you time. And so those are the kind of challenges, is finding the one that's going to work right for you, but also on a system-wide or organization-wide, because some people are going to want to have more control over it. Some people are going to want to have an easier time logging in. So I think that's the tough part, is finding the one that really fits the organization. The biggest win, I think, is when I started this, and I actually did it with Google Docs, was that patient, a 22-year-old with limb-girdle muscular dystrophy. I met that patient when she was 11 years old, and she came in for like an upper limb shoulder pain difficulty. She had impingement, but when I asked her to get up, she couldn't raise her head up off the table and utilize her abdominals to get up. So we had to log roll her over and to come up. And so going through that whole process of her with her as a young child, and then finally, after multiple years in multiple hospital systems, identifying her specialized case of limb-girdle muscular dystrophy, and then coming back with her at 22 years old, and not having to worry about my face being in the computer, that was really special, because I had a few extra minutes to talk with her about what she was doing. And she loves being in the art. So she's has these ways of modifying herself, and she's no longer able to use a manual wheelchair. So we're looking at motorized wheelchair. So it was really special to be able to just truly just focus on her and be with her. And then I actually did say to her, I said, hey, to make sure I get all these details, I'm now going to talk out loud about your manual muscle testing, okay? And I did really specifically ask her if she was ready for that. But that was a special one, to be able to have a personal conversation and just be more connected with her. So that's the win. We haven't gotten any denials yet. That was just a little over 60 days ago. So I'm sure we'll get denied the first time, but maybe it'll be different because it was written in a much more official format than my typical letters of medical necessity. Fingers crossed.
So to play a little bit of devil's advocate, kind of thinking the other side, or those skeptics out there that are saying, well, we were hearing about ChatGPT and everything that's getting put into that and putting out all these fake AI generated information, and it's not your own thoughts and it's somebody else's and all of that. How do you respond to that? And how do you show that this is an effective tool to utilize and that it isn't going to make our therapist brains totally turn off?
Well, for this, if we go back to the dictation is your words, right? The transcript that I'm putting in the AI is my words. It's my words and the patient's. So it's not like I said to the system, the application, write me a soap note for someone with De Quervain's tenosynovitis. And it's not generic. So it is directly my transcript. And so it is essentially a dictation, and it's all it is doing is formatting. I mean, one of those would be able to say, hey, do you use spell check or grammar check during your dictation when you're revising your dictation? I mean, that is something that's screening, and it's telling you how to format a sentence. I know that's very elementary, but to some degree, this is taking, and it's really just putting into, it's taking everything that I've said or the patient has said and putting it into a format that we've templated and say, put it in this format. Just as if I had a scribe, like some surgeons have a scribe that walks in the room and they just talk and they do their thing and the scribe is taking notes. That document is only as good as that scribe, but I'll bet you that physician has trained that scribe to do it in the format that they feel is the most applicable. So that's a good devil's advocate one, but quality in, quality out. I mean, if you don't have that quality assessment and you're not clear with the patient about what that plan and how it connects with the assessment, if I just say, oh, you got right hand pain and we're going to treat that, that's all that's going to come out in that documentation.
Mm-hmm. I would think it would be the same as just an evaluation. We're filling in the blanks. So when you take that information, we're writing it in a document, which would be the same as putting it into the AI format. So it could really kind of be the same.
If you look at it as a template, it identifies what goes where, and then it can turn it into a paragraph form, it can turn into a list. So I do feel like to some degree, if we really wanted to bring down the anxiety of this, we could say it's a glorified grammar check or spell check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Formatting into a template that we created.
Because it's not adding in information. It isn't putting in information that you didn't enter into it.
Correct. And I will say one thing that's interesting, this is a great way to go into it in terms of like broadening this, is it has actually helped me think a little bit more holistically, because there might be something at the beginning, like history of smoking. And we all know that smoking is reduced blood flow to the upper extremity, and it's going to reduce healing, particularly with some of our trauma patients and post-surgical patients. And so as I've gone through, I might have forgotten in my dictation, my old days, in my dictation that they were a smoker, but it's going to pull up that they're a smoker, and it might say this may have an effect on healing. If I said that at the beginning, and now it reinforces it in my assessment, and I might sit there and go, oh, hey, I need to give that patient more patient education when they come back next time. Follow up on that. And so it has allowed me to think, not just saying, hey, have you thought about quitting smoking, at least for the short term while you're facing this? It's brought it back up as maybe that's a potential patient education opportunity, because it's putting it in the patient education section or in one of the assessments that I made a little mention about it. And so it's a nice reinforcer.
Well, this is all super fascinating, and I'm excited to see where it goes. I mean, obviously, I see this just growing and expanding, and there's going to be so many other ways that we can utilize this in our clinical practice. And I appreciate you and your buddy doing some of the this front work and sharing this with us. Like I said, I think, or maybe that's my hope, is that more facilities, I know sometimes the hospitals are a little slower to jump onto these, a little more red tape and rules and regulations and a little more skepticism. But my hope is that we will be able to utilize this more in the rehab setting and to increase efficiencies. But I think also, just like you were saying, the ability to be face-to-face with our patients and not behind a computer. You hear that comment a lot, like, oh, well, my physician or my therapist or my whomever was just behind a computer the whole time and they weren't looking up. But if you're able just to have a running conversation, and then you take that information, like you said, it formats it for you. It's your words, it's your patient's words, but you're utilizing it for formatting to increase the efficiency and produce a document from your physical situation or your evaluation, your treatment session. I see great use for that, and hopefully more in the future.
Yeah, I think you've hit it in the nail on the head. And I think too, going back, you mentioned hospitals and maybe being more resistant to it, but with management, there are benefits for management in utilizing it, maybe not directly with the medical soap notes, but doing an incident report for management. You can dictate, this is what happened. You can sit there and say, hey, there's an incident, tell me what happened. And they can dictate it and go all this, and they can go back and they can get all those dictations from all the people. And then they can put it into AI to create an incident report, and boom, they've got this that with multiple people putting into it. But I think also one of the ways, if somebody's really interested in this, most all these companies have trials, and to some degree, whether it's the number of times you get to use it or whether it's a certain number of days, and saying, will you let me just be a pilot? You know, like you said, the research study, I will track how long I spend documenting with my face in front of a computer, and I'll do it for a week before or today, and then tomorrow I'll use the system and then I'll track how much I use it. So I do feel like that's a possibility to be a pilot, whether somebody does the study or not. But how does it work? And does it have to be system-wide? I don't think it does. I mean, we still haven't made the choice of who we're going with. And there's a little bit of discrepancy in my clinic. Cody actually likes one and I like the other. And they're actually the same price. So why does he have to use the same one I use if we're not bolting it on system-wide? So I do feel like there's an opportunity for people to do a pilot and maybe, you know, use it on an individual basis too. So there's not this, I could see price tag coming down and management going, what? But if it's for one person for a pilot, that might be a step in the right direction. Give me an inch. Give me an inch.
Right. Yes. I feel like that's always what we're asking for. Just that was kind of with the dictation. Let me try it. Let me see. And maybe that'll lead to some AI. Who knows?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think you're right. This is really exciting. And I just for the sake for us in our profession, for the sake of enjoying our job, reducing burnout, I really hope that people are able to find ways to stay in the profession. Certainly certified hand therapists are few and far between in our country. So we need to keep everybody in the profession to keep everybody happy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Really, Zach, thanks so much for sharing this with us. And maybe we'll see a research study coming out in the near future. Who knows?
That'd be wonderful.
We'll get some data.
It'd be awesome.
Well, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, Kara.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Hands in Motion, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. You can listen on the ASHT website and or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Google, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Once subscribed, please rate and review the podcast to help us reach new listeners and to continue offering valuable, relevant content.
You've been listening to Hands in Motion, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. To learn more about ASHT and to subscribe to the show, please visit ASHT.org. We'll see you next time on the Hands in Motion podcast.